Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Just looking ahead at noon today, we'll be taking a look at efforts to help butterflies in Wisconsin with the co-founder of the Friends of Butterfly Gardens. It's a nonprofit group that's based in Appleton, Wisconsin. So look forward to that. But right now, having a lot of fun talking with our guest today, Sarah Dykeman, author of Bicycling with Butterflies, My 10,201-Mile Journey Following the Monarch Migration. And you can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. You know, thinking about what's coming up at noon with the Friends of Butterfly Gardens, it reminded me that you talk about monarch way stations in your book, and there are some around. Talk a bit about those.
Well, way stations are places where monarchs can rest and refuel. So they're were started by the organization Monarch Watch, which is a really incredible organization based out of Lawrence, Kansas. And it basically, the idea is if you have a spot of land, whether that's a front yard, backyard, school grounds, church, parking area, like a little median lane, you can plant native plants, nectar plants for the adults and milkweed for the caterpillars, as well as provide a few other like structural elements. And then you can register your way station. And as a cyclist that traveled 10,000 miles with monarchs, I understand completely what this is. This is a traveler needs a place to rest. So we can't just protect their summer range and their winter range. We have to give them a place in between. And so the more way stations we have, the more opportunities the monarchs are going to have to rest every night, to refuel, and to plant their milkweed. They're not planting milkweed. I understand the life cycle, to lay their eggs on milkweed.
Oh, my goodness, me. Well, you caught me off guard there. I had a question for you. Then it just flew right out of my brain there for just a minute. Maybe we could talk a bit more about the, and here's what I was going to say. Now I remember what I was going to say. And that is that, as you point out in your book, the monarchs you left Mexico with and went all the way to Canada and back to Mexico, but those weren't the same butterflies you came back with.
Right. One of the most amazing things about the migration is it's multi-generational. So it takes about 3 to 5 generations of monarchs to go from Mexico in the spring back to Mexico in the fall. And so when I was in, say, Buffalo, New York, looking at those eggs on my friend's milkweed, I was able to look at these and be like, maybe I met your great grandma in Mexico, or maybe that school in Omaha I visited, your mom was that egg. And I'm never going to get tired of thinking about how incredible that is. And so the monarchs that are born in the fall, they're the ones that fly back to Mexico. So again, there's this really wonderful thing where the monarchs that are born in the fall, they emerge non-reproductive and they fly all the way to Mexico. They rely on their fat reserves all winter and they fly back in the spring. So they're living 8 months or so. Whereas the monarchs that are born in Texas in the spring, they're living as adults for about a month. So there's these really interesting things happening with morphology and with ecology and the different generations. And it's just, the more I learn, the more amazed I am. And I continue to learn and continue to be amazed.
And I was fascinated at one point in your book, you talk about how monarchs are able to figure out, because those monarchs have never been to Mexico. They're more the ones that you were just talking about, how and we don't know everything, of course, but you do talk about what we do know, not only about how they home in, but then how they have to adjust to wind and everything else.
I mean, as someone that travels a lot and gets lost a lot, I am just, oh, I only have respect for the monarchs. It is just so amazing what they can do. And the fact that the monarchs in New York have a different trajectory than the monarchs in Minnesota, because they're all flying to this one point. And how do they do that? And yeah, so the monarchs in the fall, they're relying on the sun's position, and they have internal compasses and times, like clocks in their antenna, so that they can factor in the fact that the sun's moving. And then if it's cloudy, then they're using ultraviolet radiation patterns. And then if there's no blue sky at all, then they're using electromagnetic fields. And I wish I could do that.
Oh man. Well, Deb in Plymouth emailed, she'd love to go to Mexico to see the monarchs. Is it a safe trip? She's asking.
Yeah, that comes up a lot. I've had only amazing experiences in Mexico. I've always felt safe. I think it's important to remember to not dress flashy. Leave your diamond-studded necklace at home and your gold-plated hat. But I think if you're aware and smart, it's just like traveling in New York City. You would do the same things. And yeah, I've had only good things happen to me in Mexico, and I would recommend it. I think it's a great place to visit, and I love it there. And I haven't been back for since 2020 because of COVID, and I miss all my friends and the monarchs.
Are you going to get back there?
I mean, I would love to. I'm just,
So,
trying to play it safe as much as I can.
you got a little disheartened at times. I think, and this whole process of doing this alone. First, what brought, you'd be disheartened a little bit, but then what would happen to bring you back?
Yeah, the crazy thing about biking 10,000 miles with monarchs is that you train your eyes to see the world through the lens of a monarch. So I would see the beautiful prairie, and I'd see the for sale sign or the development coming, and that would just be a kick in the gut. Or I'd be biking along the road and seeing milkweed growing, and then a mile later I'd see the mower coming, and I'd see the mower like cutting off all the milkweeds that had caterpillars on there. And that was just, it was so hard. And like you said, I would get angry and feel despair. And then I would go to a school and we'd see a monarch floating in the garden or flying through the garden. Or I'd meet someone that cared, that was trying. Or I'd visit someone whose front yard was full of native plants. And I would be reminded that I'm not alone, just like the monarchs are a relay, just like there's millions of monarchs all playing their part in the migration. There's millions of us that means if we just do a little, it makes a big difference. And that's for me what hope is that we all can do something.
Let's take another call. Diane in Darlington, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm really enjoying this talk. I used to live in Wyota, and one night I was sitting in early evening, sitting in my backyard, and I watched hundreds of monarchs fly in and land on my silver maple tree for the evening. It was really surreal. I'd never seen anything like that. I imagine that was like they were starting to migrate and gathering, and that was just where they settled for the night.
Oh,
Yeah.
is that what you might see, think was happening there, Sarah?
Yeah, I wish I'd been biking through at that moment. But what's interesting is that the monarchs during the day, they all kind of spread out and they do their own thing. But during the fall, they start to roost together each night. So in the fall especially, you'll find these clusters of monarchs, and it's really spectacular, and you're really lucky. It's funny because on my 2017 trip, I didn't see the roosts. I didn't actually see all that many monarchs. But again, that wasn't exactly the point. And then in 2019, I was biking across the country, and in Texas, in one day, I saw two roosts, and I calculated I saw about 10,000 monarchs. And I'm like, where were you in 2017? But yeah, I think that's really, again, really special. And you don't have to go to Mexico to see these clusters of monarchs. They do exist in the fall in the Midwest, especially.
Thanks very much, Diane, for calling. Appreciate your call. This whole business of, I want to go back to this traveling alone again for a minute, because it did seem to get wearing on you a bit at some point, because when you are by yourself, every decision you have to make, and more. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, this was my first big trip by myself. I traveled for a year on a bike tour with, or I've done that twice with people. And that has its own challenges. Like, I'm hungry, you're not. Ah, and then we get angry at each other. But on this trip by yourself, I had to make every decision, which does get old. Sometimes you just want to be told what to do, or you don't want to have to decide what route to take. You want someone else to choose. But in general, I liked traveling alone, and I certainly wasn't alone. Like I said, I stayed with 67 people on my trip. So that actually was a difficult part in some ways, because when I was with people, you know, we could like take turns telling stories and being energetic. And sometimes you get to someone's house and you're just tired and you just want to go to bed, but you kind of owe it to them to be a little interesting.
And you can't let somebody else sort of carry that for you because you're all by yourself.
Exactly.
And that did cause you, at some point, you write about thinking about your friends. Some of them, you know, now they've got their 9-to-5 jobs. Some of them are getting married, and et cetera. And it caused you, I think, to do a little reflecting on your own life.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that no matter what choices you've made and where you're going, you have these moments where you think, what am I doing with my life? But since I was biking 8, 9, 10 hours by myself every day, I had a lot of time to think about that. And I don't know if I came to an answer. I do think it's important to offer more opportunities for what success looks like. And I hoped when I was giving my presentation that I could show young kids that you don't have to have a 9-to-5 job to be happy and successful. And that just because no one's done something before doesn't mean it's impossible. And so I think that there's a lot of value in taking your own path, but it can often be a little scary to not exactly know where you're going or what you want, but one step at a time. And again, I guess I would just say, like, that was in 2017, and now it's almost 2022, and now I feel like the Monarchs are kind of leading the way. They're saying, hey, like, all these opportunities are opening up. Why don't you try this? And so I'm still kind of going on a weird path, but now I'm with the Monarchs.
I think it's a good path myself. Maybe it's weird to some people, but I think it's a darn good path. Mary emailed. Her son lives near Monterey, California, where there's a small overwintering area for Monarchs. And after all the fires last summer, there were zero overwintering Monarchs last winter. She was there in person and thought perhaps the subgroup was facing possible extinction. But to everyone's relief, there are apparently 11,000 or so resting there right now.
Yeah, all populations in the wild fluctuate year to year. That's totally normal. The issue is when your population gets so low that those fluctuations can reach zero, which is extinction. And the Western, we call it population, it's not actually a distinct population, but we'll call them the Western population for the sake of simplicity. They are not doing well at all. And that is, of course, because of habitat loss like the Eastern Monarchs. But I think more there is also climate change. So if the temperature doesn't get low enough that the Monarchs emerge in sexual diapause or non-reproductive, they don't go to the coastal trees. They don't overwinter. They just remain reproductive. So California probably won't lose the Monarchs. But they might lose the migration, which means they'll just be year-round Monarchs that are reproducing and dying every month or so, which would be really disheartening. And so I think it's important to think when we're thinking about climate change, we're not just thinking about ourselves. We are thinking about these Monarchs and their really amazing life history. We don't want to lose that, because that wouldn't be fair to the next generation.
Well, you've thought of a great way to bring it all to our attention with your book, Bicycling with Butterflies, Sarah. I really enjoyed it very much. I know our listeners, I've had a lot of comments from people that really liked your book. Thank you so much for doing this, and thank you so much for being with us today. It was really a treat for me to be able to talk with you today. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, and I'm just so happy that I can expand my voice. That's the goal, is to be a voice for the monarch. And with your help and with all the readers' help, this is how we spread the word. So thanks.
Well, many thousands of people heard you today on the show. Thank you, Sarah. Sarah Dykeman is our guest, the book Bicycling with Butterflies. And stay with us. We'll be back right after this quick look at the news. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, we just learned about special connections people can have to butterflies all around the nation. And here in Wisconsin, we have a wide variety of species to view and enjoy. And today on the show, Jack Voigt, he co-founded Friends of Butterfly Gardens, joins us. Next year marks the 10th anniversary of this Appleton-based nonprofit. We will talk with him about how it's changed over the past 10 years and what's new for the future. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you. Have you been to a butterfly garden? Do you grow milkweed near your yard? What do you love about Wisconsin butterflies? Join the conversation. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jack Voigt, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, Larry, thank you very much as well. I'd like to mention that my wife is with me as well. So she and I are basically the co-founders of Butterfly Gardens of Wisconsin. And so we're on a speakerphone right now on my cell phone. So I hope my speakerphone is all right. Or should I take the speakerphone off?
No, you sound good. You sound good.
Oh, good, good.
Well, how did the two of you get, or why first did you start this nonprofit? Maybe that's the way to go.
Well, more than 10 years ago, I purchased a property out in the country to make it a community gardens. And because I have a background, I'm as a master gardener, I wanted to do something similar to what the Border Botanical Gardens are making in Milwaukee. But after all my stuff with politics and insurance, real estate, all that other stuff, after I purchased the property, I didn't do anything really much with it. And so about 12 years ago, I decided to do an assessment, and I had a person from Menominee Falls come up and do a site assessment and discovered that, well, really, we have a wetlands prairie there, and we had like 13 or 14 different butterflies making their residence there. So all of a sudden, the light bulb went on. I said, well, rather than having a botanical gardens for the community, I'll have a butterfly garden instead. And so that sort of spurred the idea to do this for the community.
Well, that is a great story. And I imagine that's evolved, the property and so forth, and evolved, changed over the past decade.
Yes, indeed. I'd like to mention right now, I'll give the phone to my wife to talk about that evolution, okay? Here's Marty.
Marty, hi. Talk about how this has changed over the past decade.
Well, we've definitely grown, gotten a lot bigger. We've learned a lot. I have to say, when we first started this, we didn't really know too much about butterflies, but we found people who did, and they gave us a lot of information, and our mission became to help the bees and butterflies due to their population decline, and also to educate the public about it. And I am in my 49th year of teaching, and so for me, it had to be an educational experience, but still, and let's hope education is always fun. So we wanted to let people know about a lot of fun facts about butterflies and to make this a place all ages would enjoy. We started out having an observational hive, and as I said, Jack and I didn't know a lot, so our first two hives, the queen left, and so we ended up getting a beekeeper, Dr. Rich Merkhoffer, to help us. And so he takes care of the observational beehive. And so we have a 2-acre prairie maze cut in the shape of a butterfly. It's a very simple maze because we get a lot of field trips of perhaps 63 and 4 year olds out there, and we figure the objective is for them to not get lost. So we now have a little bee maze, and that is something that we developed, Jack developed this summer, and we also have the Fox City Bee Club members who keep their beehives out there, and that started this summer. And so just every year we tend to grow and add more things, and we have turtles and frogs and a butterfly house and a gift store, and we feature local jewelry makers and craftsmen. We have beekeepers selling their honey out there. We sell native plants and seeds for people, and we'll help them with their gardens. And all this, you know, has just been growing over the years. We have a local children's author who does their storytelling out there every year. And this year we're involved in a pollinators group, and the mayor made his proclamation about Appleton being a bee city out at the Butterfly Gardens this summer. So just different opportunities come up, and, you know, it keeps us developing our education too.
I'm wondering, in terms of the butterflies, do you know how many different species or types of butterflies that you might see in a visit in the summertime to your property, or maybe how many have you noticed over a season?
Well, this is it depends upon the season, because in Wisconsin, there's roughly over 100 different species of different types of butterflies. But in Outagamie County, that's where we're in, they say there's roughly about 40 different species, but we don't only see about 16 to 18 different species at our gardens. And it all depends upon the species. Some species will only be there for 2 or 3 weeks, and where monarchs will have for the entire season. So it also depends upon the weather, depends upon the species, depend upon a certain kind of plant. And so some seasons will have a big influx of, for example, red admiral. Another season will have a big influx of swallowtails. So it all depends upon the season. And so we are dependent upon Mother Nature to perform at its maximum as possible.
So, if you were going to pick a species or two that are probably most prevalent, they would be what? Swallowtails, maybe?
Most prevalent would be the monarch butterflies, because we have them through the entire season. As your former guest, Sarah, said, and it's true, that there's like 4 or 5 generations of monarchs, where the first, second monarch or generation, third and fourth, may be only there for 30 days, but the last generation that is born sort of like end of the August, they become, they will transfer or migrate down to Mexico. So they'll live for about 8 or 9 months. But again, it all depends upon the season as to how many we would have at any given time. But normally we'd have probably between well over 100 to 200 or 300 monarchs in the hoop house area, or the butterfly house, at any given time, plus other species. So we do print out a list of species that the visitors come to our site on a particular day. We're only open from Wednesday through Saturday from 10 to 3 o'clock. And so, as we say, monarchs are sort of lazy. They get up late and go to bed early.
Well, so you must have a lot of milkweed there.
Yes, we do. And we, you know, in Wisconsin, there's roughly about 10 different species of milkweed. And Sarah talked about the tropical milkweed. We use the tropical milkweed early on because we have a greenhouse at home here. And I have a friend also has a greenhouse. And we start planting the tropical milkweed in the greenhouse so that when we get monarchs, pregnant monarchs in May, we have already the monarch, milkweed available for the female to lay her eggs on in early May. So we'll have, at the first week in June, we'll have adult monarchs to view. And whereas many times we not see a monarch until the middle part of June or end of June. So that's the idea, is to have a couple of my friends from Florida to send us pregnant female monarchs so we can produce them right away.
There you go. Oh, man. You must get you have a lot of children there, obvious. I'm curious, what kinds of questions do kids ask about butterflies?
Well, Marty, go ahead.
Oh, boy, I'd have to think about that one. But we try to tell them interesting facts. I don't think I mentioned this before, but when we get field trips, I put on this little thing about the life cycle of bees, and the kids volunteer to be the queen bee, the worker bees, and the baby bees. And, I have them put on wings and little antenna, and they help me make a presentation about that. And they love hearing facts like butterflies taste with their feet. And, they're so cute. And they are just interested in everything. And they also like, we have turtles and they can catch frogs with Jack. And, you know, I hear, I'm centered more in the main building, but I can hear all this squealing coming up from the frog pond, and I know that they're having a good time catching frogs.
So describe the property for me, Jack or Marty, either one of you. Marty mentioned the main building. So what have we got here to see in terms of structures and so forth?
Well, I like to call it a happy place for visitors, because anytime that people come up, first of all, we're handicap accessible. It's 7 acres of land, and most of the property is accessible with a wheelchair, if you had to come by a wheelchair or with a stroller or whatever it may be. But we have a number of patios, so people can bring their lunch. They want to have their lunch before they view or after they view the butterflies in our butterfly house. We also... I'm now in the process of creating a nice waterfall with a patio, so people can view the waterfall and see the turtles and the frogs and the tadpoles in that area. The 2-acre butterfly maze. We also have a half mile walking path around the whole property, so you can see various types of species of butterflies and birds and stuff like that. And so. There's a lot of different things that go on. So you can come as a person and enjoy a quiet time, or interact with your friends and come that way. So every person has their own way of enjoying nature. We would like to have people come out to our gardens because, you know, so many kids these days are on their computers or on their cell phones or laptops, whatever it is. But when they come out, they interact with nature. And when I was a kid, I was a farm boy. And I caught butterflies only by branches of a tree. So I had my own butterfly collection from 1959 yet. And the thing is that people need that interaction, I think, with nature. Because when we were kids, we enjoyed nature so much because it was free.
Yeah.
And so basically, they can come out to our gardens. It's not that very expensive. And so... In the last year, we have now created a 501c3, because before that, Marty and I owned the property and it was a LLC. And, of course, we don't make any money.
Yeah.
So we decided to make this a community effort now. So we hope to, when we pass on, the community will own the butterfly gardens. and the gardens will be a community asset. By having a community asset, our future generations of kids will truly enjoy the experience of the environment, plus also insects and birds and all the other good things that are happening here at our butterfly gardens.
I'm wondering, have schools, of course it's, you know, probably the most active in the summertime, but I'm wondering if schools have used your property for educational purposes.
Well, a lot of homeschool groups come out, and we have a lot of field trips for, kindercare type groups, daycares, and camps coming out. So the ages range, well, from any age up to about 12 with groups like that. The environmental elementary school in Appleton has been out, and it is difficult for school field trips, like you say, because we don't open until June 1st. And then we are only open through about mid-September, because then the butterflies are leaving our area or forming a winter chrysalis.
Yeah, that makes sense. And somebody was wondering, is it free to come and visit, or a small charge, or what?
Right now, the charge is $10 for adults and $5 for kids, and two and under are free. But we also, since we established a 501c3, we also have a Friends of Butterfly Gardens as a member, or you can donate to the cause. Or we have also our my first year is that we hope to raise $100,000 that money will be put into the community foundation. So that money will be there permanently, so that whatever earnings from that will help support the operation expenses. And so we're now moving towards a new direction of our gardens. And so we hope to have the foundation, the community foundation for the butterfly gardens, to be a support for the future of our endeavors here. Regarding kids and everything else, we plan to get more involved with the schools by having monarch raising kits, and have every elementary school in Appleton and hopefully other schools to participate, and so they can rear monarchs in their classroom and hopefully late May. So we hope to have that as a part of our mission this coming year, is to get more involved with schools and the teachers. So also the Boys and Girls Club, last year we supported them with monarch raising kits, and so they already enjoyed that experience as well. So we work with more nonprofits who are geared to supporting kids. And by having that connection with kids, they realize that there's other forms of fun in the summertime other than on their computers. So going out to nature centers, we have a lot of nature centers in the community here, like Bluebells and Heck Rod and places like that. And so, but certainly we work with those groups as well. So, but we sort of focus in on insects, especially the monarchs and bees. And so, because pollinators are in short supply these days, and 30% of our food that we eat come from pollinators. And if we don't have those species of insects, we're going to be eating less assortment of foods, because they are dependent upon the pollination of those plants to provide food for us. So,
I'm wondering on those monarch raising kits, because the one thing that comes to mind is, if you got the monarch, you got to have some milkweed. But what goes into one of the kits?
Okay, the initial kit is, I have two milkweed plants, or mostly tropical milkweed, with two caterpillars, because one caterpillar can eat the whole milkweed plant down they go through it's called 5 instars. So they start out as an egg, and 3 days later becomes a caterpillar, and then every couple of days it sheds its skin and becomes a larger caterpillar. By the time it gets to the 4th and 5th instar, they're very, very hungry, and they poop a lot, and they and so we got to make certain that we don't give too many caterpillars on a plant. So the kit includes a large cage so that they can observe the monarch caterpillar as it grows and grows. And so by the 12th or 14th day, the caterpillar will go to the top of the cage and become a chrysalis in the J form first, and then a chrysalis, and then 12 days later it becomes an adult if everything goes well. But again, not every egg, as Sarah said, the monarch will probably, female can raise between, can lay between 200 to 400 eggs. So we also have a butterfly lab. We raise monarch eggs in there as well, so that we have more monarchs on our property. We like to have 1 million monarchs in the next few years, so that we can complete the idea of having more monarchs in Mexico. But again, these monarch raising kits are $50 a piece, and that includes the cage, the caterpillars, the milkweed, instructions. Also, since I've been in the insurance business for many, many years, I have an insurance policy too. So if your caterpillar dies, you can come back to the garden and pick up a replacement caterpillar.
And because that's not enough milkweed, the plants that are included in the kit, they can come back and get more milkweed from us. And, you know, we have milkweed ready to go for when people show up.
Well, it sounds wonderful. How do people, do you have a website or a place where people can look and learn more and see what you got going on?
Oh, sure. It's just, they can either, we have two different websites. We're trying to merge into one, but it's friendsofbutterflygardens.com. And so the email is also friendsofbutterflygardens@gmail.com. So we, right now we're selling memberships of $50 for a family, so they can come unlimited amount of time. So if you get a family membership, you can bring your family out, and it's unlimited admissions to the gardens. Or you can come out on a daily basis. And also there's a Facebook page too. But if they want to come out on a daily basis only and just buy a single admission, they can do that too. So there's many different options available for people to come and enjoy and have fun at our gardens.
Well, it's been a great pleasure talking with you. Again, that website, friendsofbutterflygardens.com. Jack and Marty Void, who have done some yeoman work here, and it's fun to learn about this, and I know it's a big asset to the community. It was great to have both of them with us today, and great to have you listening in today as well. And don't forget, tomorrow Santa will be stopping by for his annual visit, and would love to hear from all the youngsters out there in Wisconsin public radio land. So get that child or that grandchild to call us tomorrow and talk to Santa. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.